What would be the impact of that, of having a digital currency?
In a weird way, nothing. I mean, it doesn't really change anything, right? I think the fear people will have is that because it's digital, its value is generally or subjective. And much like the Chinese have their own credit score on people or their social score, the United States could have that. They could devalue your money versus the next guy based on your adherence to the government's policies.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that would be astonishing.
I didn't mean to throw that one at you.
Bill McIntosh Show, now on with Steve Beamon. He's a self-made millionaire who sunk to the depths of financial despair and rose back up to the heights of the economic prosperity. Having enjoyed years of a happy marriage to falling into the depths of divorce, destruction, and despair, Steve has seen it all. He's worked at Wharton Econometrics, Zacks Investment Research, EF Hutton Company. He's a founding partner of the Wall Street firm Chicago Investment Analytics. Steve Beamon sold the firm to Charles Schwab in 2000. Currently, Steve is the CEO of Elevare Club, a holding company for a group of companies providing services for small businesses, including the capital payment processing, accounting, legal, advertising, and even help in hiring. Steve is a licensed scuba diver, a private pilot, the father of six children, and ready for action. Steve, how are you today? Welcome to the Bill McIntosh Show to talk about inflation. How's it going?
Bill, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
But likewise. Hey, listen, you know, I saw the, I went to Zero Hedge and I saw that the headline, Gazprom declares force majeure, will halt gas flows to Germany indefinitely. What's your reaction to that? That sounds pretty bad because we've got so much tightness in the hydrocarbons market. Many parts of the world, the United States and other places, rely on natural gas for just a tremendous variety of applications, from producing electricity to home heat in some cases, or you know, people in their kitchens. In many countries, as you probably know, they use natural gas to power all sorts of vehicles, including automobiles and utility vehicles. What's your reaction to this declaration from Gazprom, the Russian gas giant?
Well, a couple of things I think that are worthy of comment. First, it's not really a surprise. The Russians have been telegraphing this move for quite some time. And I think the second thing is it really highlights that Germany built their own problem. They shut down domestic production of all alternative forms, including nuclear, banking on the Russians to be good neighbors. And I think it's not hard to historically look at Putin and his cronies and say they're not good neighbors. So there, thankfully, this didn't happen in the winter. That would have been a real catastrophe. You've got some time here, but the U.S. needs to re-get its energy stocks so we can start helping out our German neighbors.
Let me ask you a question about the effects of the Biden administration, its actions by way of executive order, federal lands, drilling, and what have you. Any type of, let's say, executive orders that impact fracking, which, of course, gives us condensates as well as natural gas and oil. You know, is there anything that Biden can do himself if he were to just say, hey, look, you know, I'm going to put woke policies aside. We are desperate. We're in a situation that's critical. Gasoline has gone sky high, as has diesel. What can he do that would be able to really help impact in a positive way fuel prices, aside from just, you know, gutting the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which I think is a terrible idea?
Well, clearly what he needs to do is backtrack on his campaign promise that he would bankrupt and shut down the oil industry. You can't have that kind of an attitude and have these people invest billions and billions of dollars on 5 and 10 year returns. So he's got to backtrack the political talk, and then he's got to sit down with the oil executives and come up with a legitimate plan. I think most people say if we can transition out of carbon fuels, that's a wonderful thing. But let's not bankrupt the U.S. economy in doing so. So let's come up with a long-term plan. It's going to be a 20, 40-year plan. The oil companies will accept that. They understand the writing's on the wall, but they've got to have time to deal with this. And so he's going to have to go to them and develop a real plan. And I personally don't think he's going to do it because he's beholden to the environmentalist movement.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, they'll always argue, well, look, you know, it's 40 years, but we got to start now. And well, the fact of the matter is that, you know, as John Kerry famously said, I think in 2015 at a climate summit, you know, even if America did everything possible and the American people as individuals taking initiative to try to fight climate change, would have plant trees and bike to work and, you know, find all sorts of ways to reduce the impact of the carbon footprint as a nation and as individuals, it still wouldn't be enough.
Even if every single American biked to work or carpooled to school, used solar power panels to power their homes, if we each planted a dozen trees and did all of this at the same time, that still wouldn't be enough to counteract the carbon pollution coming from the rest of the world. This is a global challenge, and that's why we are working to offer global leadership. We can only deal with this with a global solution.
Well, Bill, clearly the Chinese and the Indians are pumping all this crap in the atmosphere. You get one big volcano that goes off, that sends it. I think the problem, and if you'll give me a little license
here. Sure.
In 1979-80, I remember the Carter presidency when Jimmy Carter said, we're going to run out of gas by 1990. He wasn't wrong when he said it. What he did, which is so often done, is used a steady state model that didn't presume any development of new technologies, any development of new efficiencies, any development of anything that could change that model. They're doing the same with climate change. They're extending out, not presuming that we'll come up with cleaner technologies, not presuming that we can transport things better. So they're creating a false narrative to people saying, if we don't change, things are dead. Because their models presume there is no change.
Not exactly. They don't understand the idea of a dynamic economy and all the different technologies that can be brought online. One thing that really irks me is, now, I live in a foreign country. I live in Peru. And here in Peru, you'll get into a taxi to rush to the airport. And there's not that much room in the trunk because there's a yellow tank that's taking about half the space. And that yellow tank is full of natural gas. And so it means that, you know, you can get, you know, the taxi driver can drive 75 miles, maybe for $6, $7, maybe even less. And it's just a tremendous fuel source. But in the United States, you can't spend $1,000 like you can in Peru or other Latin American countries to switch over to natural gas combining with gasoline. No, you can't do that. It'll cost you $8,000 to get a specially made tank that has Teflon and titanium in it and fulfills all the requirements the federal law probably has established.
Very, very much so. It's the unintended consequences of the EPA type policies that cause people not to be able to make choices like that. So I would make the argument the economy needs more freedom, not less, in order to come up with solutions to what we mostly agree could be real problems.
Absolutely. Sure. So let me bring your attention to what's currently happening with the, you know, the very, very high inflation. We're looking at something we haven't seen for four decades. They're talking about ratcheting up to 75 basis points, you know, the prime interest rate. This is shocking. It reminds me of times back in the 70s when, you know, you could work as a caddy in a country club and, you know, deposit your money to get a 5% return at the savings bank.
Yeah. I tell you what's interesting to me, like you, I lived through that. And that was caused by an oil shock. This one is caused by an oil shock. When you see gasoline prices go up by 100% from $2.50 to $5, that trickles through everything in the economy, as you know. Food prices go up, clothing prices go up, building material prices go up, services go up. That's the driver. Now, throw on top of that the supply chain mess created by COVID. And on top of that, government response, which threw money at the problem, which by definition, is inflationary. So you put all that together and you've got one whopping problem.
Okay, let me ask you a question. What is it that the government could do right now to address this? I mean, I suppose we'd want to roll back restrictions and onerous regulations on oil and gas, pass a law, you know, something that could make it attractive again to invest and to frack and to drill. Anything else that you think Joe Biden could do if he was so inclined
to I really could absolutely,
address again, the problem?
Bill, as you know from my bio, the Elevair Club is a small business company. We work with thousands of small businesses. We work across the country helping small business flourish. The problem they have is that there's overregulation and overtaxation. Most of these are subchapter S companies. I won't say most, but many of them are. And so those tax increases that everybody seems to want, except Joe Manchin, those go right at those people. And they can't afford it. They need to reinvest in better plant and equipment, better people. They can't do it if they're taxed out of it. So the regulatory environment, the tax environment, and then we need to open up the spigot on the gas to get prices down. Because there, what's happening is the small business is getting wage inflation coming its way. It can't afford it. Walmart can take care of it. The big guys can. But when you come to the local company, their employees are demanding more wages because inflation's eaten into their income and the small business can't afford it.
Right. What is it? What's the impact on small business? When you have gasoline, and I don't know what the percentage increase in diesel has been, but when you have, let's say, the price of gasoline doubled, what does that do from the standpoint of costs for a small business?
Look at a nursery company or a company that does landscaping, right? They now have to drive out to your location, fill up their equipment, do all of the things that require gasoline. It costs them more. The local contractor has higher costs because transporting himself and his team to their site costs more. All of their follow-through products cost more now because if you look at lumber, it's gone sky high because of the supply chain issues. So these guys are eating cost after cost after cost increase. Many times they cannot pass them on to their customer.
Right. So then it's something that's like, it's a snowball effect. And, you know, it would be fantastic if we had real leadership. I just don't think we have it. I think Joe Biden is capable of stomaching criticism.
I think a fascinating statistic, and I think it was his economic advisory team. They came out, and I think it was one of the major newspapers reported, they have zero business experience on the entire team. They're all academics.
Yes, sure.
And so
what does that mean? Goodness gracious. Well,
right. You and I live in a world that understands small. We know the people, the mom and pops who make this economy go. That American dream has been the founding dominant issue in our country that's created the economy we have. But we're strangling it with regulation, taxes, and government policies that cause things like wage inflation. These people just can't pay.
The people who are hurt the most are the ones that the Democrat Party, you know, pretends to really care the most about. And that's the poor, the people on low incomes.
It's always the case. It's
are crushed.
The fixed income people now, whether you're retired or if you're on social welfare programs, you're getting hurt. These people who have looked to government, said, help me, and they're legitimate in their desire. Government comes back, and even though they have good intentions, the outcome of their programs just cause more inflation, more misery, and more upset business, which is what creates the economy.
Right, sure. I mean, small business in the United States produces what? You know, maybe 40%, 50%, 60%.
It's
or more.
Down from 40 years ago, but we're still about half the U.S. economy. We're the bulk of new employment. We're the bulk of patents and new technologies. Small business is still what drives the United States. And I would argue it's going to drive the world if the world's to capture this kind of growth.
Looking at the micro level, and let's leave the macro behind for a little bit. What can small business owners, what can they do? What does it look like to take initiative and grab the bull by the horns?
Well, right now,
what do you advise people?
What we are looking at with our members is we've looked at the low-hanging fruit to reduce cost. And I think for American business, one of the lowest hanging fruits is health insurance. So the Elevair Club has a health insurance program that can help them save money through one of our partners. We have additional services that help cut costs, and that's the key to them right now. Cut your cost, build your digital marketing, get the word out for less money. They've got to be able to control for that.
What would the impact be in the bottom line of a small company that maybe has 15 employees if they were to lower their health insurance? I mean, what percentage reduction would it be in their operating costs?
You could see a 60 to 65% reduction in your healthcare costs. So on 15 employees, that could be tens of thousands of dollars a month.
It's a terrific amount of money.
It is. And it's important. And again, it's a matter, as we go forward into a digital age, it's the idea of building a frictionless economy. So small businesses we work with, we're trying to bring them into the digital age. We've tried to reduce cost in networking, marketing, service provision. So we're trying to help these people reduce the fundamental cost of that business through the elimination of friction. For the consumer right now, I mean, the reality is you're going to be eating more chicken than steak. That's just the way it is.
Oh, sure. But, you know, we're looking at, you know, increases in fertilizer costs,
absolutely,
increases in grain costs. My gosh, man. I mean, this is getting to be so disturbing. I mean, it's looking like, you know, people are going to have to, you know, have gardens in their backyard or their front yard, you know.
Bill, what disturbs me the most is I lived through the late 70s when you had this massive inflation. So Paul Volcker came out and said, I'm going to run interest rates up to 20%. We're stopping this right now. And he did. And we had that massive recession in 82. We got out of that because Ronald Reagan spent like crazy on the Defense Department. And that is additive spending in the economy. So the economy boomed. Well, right now you have a situation where if the Fed raises rates like that to quell inflation and create that recession, the government has no power to spend. They're spending everything now. So where do you get the stimulus to restart?
The patient is in the emergency room. It's on the table. They've tried so many things. I mean, spending massively, quantitative easing. What's left over?
Well, the Fed is they're at a no-win place. And again, I go back to what happened in Japan, where their central bank wasn't able to get them out of 10 years or 15 years of just no economy. I'm concerned that the United States is in a position where, barring a significant increase in technological advancement, we're not going to see the growth rates we've seen. The $30 trillion in debt will weigh us down. The $6 trillion deficits will weigh us down. And that doesn't even think about the global strategic influences of China and Russia right now.
Do you think that we're in a position now where China could carry out a monetary Pearl Harbor with other countries, the BRICS? And
I think there will be an attempt to do that. And the reason I think that is because if you look deeply at the Chinese data, they're setting up a bubble of their own. They have been forcing labor to build real estate for so long, and it keeps their people employed and it keeps them happy. Well, that's all coming to an end. China could be in a position where they have millions and millions and millions of unemployed people real soon. So they're going to have to make a response to that. I think their response, like any government, will be to go external. And so the BRIC companies or countries, I think, likely will try to come at a global currency.
Paul Greg Roberts, former undersecretary, the Treasury for Ronald Reagan, considered by some to be a co-architect of the Reagan Revolution, has said that if the dollar ceases to be the dominant world currency, the reserve currency of the world, we will become like Haiti overnight. Do you think we're at a point where we could see that happen?
I don't think so. And you're going to get hairy in the weeds, right? I think we're entering a new digital age where the way things have been in the past will not look like this in the future. For the first time, we really are at a transition in economies. So I think the end of the dollar as the dominant currency is going to happen. That's a no-brainer. It will happen here. The question is, with what will it be replaced? And I think it's going to be much more of a globalized business community and a globalized currency. Hopefully it'll be in the digital space where it's frictionless.
Right. I mean, you see a basket of currencies. I mean, I don't think the world is ready to rely on China.
No, they won't. The world won't. You might have the Chinese pushing it with certain trading partners, but overall it would be an IMF type basket of currencies. I think, you know, this whole idea of digital currency, the Fed is coming out with a digital coin. So the United States will have a digital currency. It's just a matter of not if, but when. I think you're seeing that more and more.
What would be the impact of that, of having a digital currency?
In a weird way, nothing. I mean, it doesn't really change anything, right? I think the fear people will have is that because it's digital, its value is generally subjective. And much like the Chinese have their own credit score on people or their social score, the United States could have that. They could devalue your money versus the next guy based on your adherence to the government's policies.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that would be astonishing.
Didn't mean to throw that one at you.
No, it's okay. I'm glad you did. I mean, That's absolutely mind-bending. I mean, I just thought that what it would mean is that they'd be tracking every single transaction, no matter how small.
Well, they will, but what's going to happen is you're going to see, and I'll give you a specific example. The Elevare Club now has created and is implementing its own metaverse. So we are bringing our businesses into the digital world through our metaverse. We are introducing in the next period of time the tokenization of that metaverse so that our members can transact with each other through a token process as opposed to using currency. It's a barter system almost. So that,
I mean, like crypto, is that cryptocurrency or what?
Well, that's got a funny name. We think of it more as a token. It's just an ability to say, I have this many tokens. I want your service. I'll give you this many of them. So it's a barter system with tokens to balance the scales. I think those types of economic sub worlds will be more evolving over the next 10 years.
Yeah, but I mean, is it, have you worked it out so that they can become convertible into cash? Or no?
Well, or just any token, take a look at your United Frequent Flyer miles. They're convertible into cash. Any digital thing is convertible to cash. It's a question of at what level and all that. So yeah, ultimately the Elevare tokens are convertible back to cash or to whatever you want. But within the world, within the universe, there it's just bartering back and forth with those.
Right. And speaking of the Elevare Club, how did you come up with that name?
That was done by our team in Dallas who thought it was really cool because it's Latin for to elevate. And we want to elevate business. We think it's a really cool idea.
So, and you have any thoughts about cryptocurrency? Is that something that, is in flames? And
well, let me share with you what I would tell our investors or our employees. The metaverse, as an example, and I would use crypto in the same boat, they're commodities. They have no underlying intrinsic value. The only value of Elevare is that we bring the metaverse into an ecosystem of services that people can need and use. Absent that, these technologies, whether it's a crypto or a metaverse or whatever, are just there. They're just commodities. I think the crypto phase has both come and gone, but it's also just beginning. Bitcoin is clearly a commodity people want. It has a limited supply, which inherently has value, but so did tulips back in the 1500s. So,
all right. Yeah, you could, buy a rowboat with a pocket full, you know? I
mean, that's right, exactly.
Right.
But it's an interesting world we go to, and it is going to be digital, and it's going to be in these, what I'll think of as these metaverses, these, digital universes. And I think it's going to change how we look at economics fundamentally over the next 5 to 10 years.
Right. Well, I mean, look at the internet. I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, people didn't even know what it was in 1990.
Right. And the metaverse will be many times bigger than the internet. It's the whole Web 3.0. It's the idea of rather than looking at the technology, you're in the technology.
Right. So it's basically something you can go to. You can go to the, the Monadnock building in Illinois and.
Yep.
Put up a neon light that says Elevare Club if you want to. Or
well, that's right. We are a network of local clubs that are all digitally based, so you can kind of do whatever you want. We could have one in Peru and have the Peru Elevare
Club,
right?
That's awesome. So how does that work? I mean, you have franchisees. What's the deal with that?
We run it all centrally, and it's okay. You're going to get deep in the weeds now because we're actually establishing it as a DAO, a DAO. A distributed autonomous operation. Our members kind of control it through the use of these tokens. But what we do when somebody joins the Elevare Club, they're assigned to a concierge right off. It's a human being who walks them through the services we have and how it all works. So it's kind of the best of the old world and the new world, we think, combined.
Oh, fantastic. So you've got somebody who can take you through there and just as a goodwill gesture, give you 25 tokens or something of that.
Exactly. That just to help them get started. So it's fun though. And again, we're working with the small business community. That's our passion. That's where our heart is. And we think these people need the help to move into this digital space. I mean, the big guys have all the money and the resources. They can do it easily, but the small guys really don't. And so we're bringing them the resources the big guys have.
Well, fantastic. So folks, you want to find out more about the metaverse and small business, you got to go to Elevare Club, right? So it's spelled www.elevareclub, which is E-L-E-V-A-R-E club.com. Did we get that right?
You Elevare absolutely Club. Did. I give speeches and I get people chanting E-L-E-V-A-R-E, club.com.
Fantastic. it sounds fantastic. I mean, it's. I don't know if we're going to be able to make deliveries in the metaverse or not, but.
Well, with drones, right?
right. I guess we're going to see that. That's
you and I will have a digital, we'll have a virtual lunch and we'll both order food from our favorite place and sit here and eat because the drone delivered it.
Right.
Or our 3D printer produced it.
Right. It's an amazing thing. We're going to find out what it looks like, folks. It's coming to a website near you, I guess.
Absolutely.
We're going to rely on Meta, formerly known as Facebook, I guess, to participate in this.
Let me touch on that, by the way. I think they've bombed in this effort because, again, a metaverse without any purpose is just worthless. What's unique about Elevare is we took that metaverse and we blended it and married it to these services so that you can actually get tangible benefit within that world. And that's different. That's unique.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's interesting. I guess you have to go to ElevareClub.com, find out more about this. Steve Beamon, thanks so much for being on the Bill McIntosh Show. Hopefully we can do it again. Talk about other important issues that are affecting the economy and affecting small business, the engine of growth in the United States of America, and of well-being for those who are entrepreneurs and want to break out onto their own and become multimillionaires and fulfill the American dream.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a real pleasure. And keep the faith, keep spreading the word, and everybody know that tomorrow will come and it's the first day of the rest of your life.